Hi guys.
Hello.
Thank you.
Should we wait or?
I'm not sure. I'm not in charge of the orchestration of this, but it sounds like you're waiting.
Ah, right now.
Is that the address of the Munster? I think so. Who remembers the address of the Munster's house?
1313 Munster Lane.
Thank you. That's this room. Not to tell you all how old I am, remember that.
Can we just ask the first time you answer, just say your name so our transcriber, whoever will.
Very good.
This looks really efficient. Very cool.
I started watching it last night.
Okay.
And I must say,
a lot of it is over my head.
You know, that literally.
So I missed your first half of that sentence.
I just said I started watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it just seemed over my head. Because it's almost a language, even though it's right in front of us, it's something we don't talk about that often.
Just first of all, the universe is over everyone's head, just to be clear.
So when you present shows like this, how rudimentary do you need to be? I mean, it's almost like teaching baby steps to kind of get everybody to be aware of, like you said at the beginning of the show, there's stuff that was below us and then there's stuff that's above us.
Yeah, I don't think rudimentary is the right word, but being...
Your name?
Kara. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know where
you're.
I'm sorry. I'm Kara Vell. I do the animation in the series, the narrative portions of the show. But I think it's more about being really clear with our science, particularly in what I do. And we often have to do like little infographics explaining sort of complicated science issues, and you know we have to work. My team of animators, we're not astrophysicists, so we do a ton of research and then try to formulate a way with that knowledge to make it clear to the audiences while still being visually compelling. But, and I feel like Neil is the best at being accessible with that information to people. So I'd hope that people aren't too confused by it.
You're not wearing a tie. I'm so used to your... solar system tie.
I left it in my hotel room. I had a tie that had everything in the universe on it.
What is it about this moment in time that makes this show seem particularly needed? Because we're at a time where people are challenging scientists and science, and even they're in some places they're trying to teach creationism to children.
Flat earthers.
So, was that a part in developing this new season?
I think it definitely was a conversation point between Brannon and Anne when they were writing the scripts. Absolutely.
I mean, when it was conceived, also the concept of possible worlds, like where we can go, the hopeful nature of that, and hope not as an idea of a passive reaction to something, but more as an active, what's our plan B when things are not going exactly the way we want them to go. So I really think that possible worlds is supposed to suggest where we could be, and whether that's, you know, in the realm of exoplanets that we can travel to, or simply just the world of who we can be as human beings on this planet and stewards of.
By looking also
Jason Clark, by the way, adding that name for you.
By also looking at who we were, right? The first city. I thought that was fascinating.
Yes.
The way that the animation, like everything, was fascinating about that.
Yeah, I would say that the getting back to your question about is it the right time? I think it's always the right time to get a little bit of science going, get the science mojo flowing. But I can tell you that I'm stupefied by what I see in the world, like the rise of flat earthers. I thought we kind of left that 500 years ago, so it must mean I really suck at what I do. Okay, should we have a rise? Or it would have been much worse than if we're not for these other forces. But I can tell you that this Cosmos series season in particular is not about blame. It's about hope. And just to echo, it's not hope, passive hope. It's active, real pathways that you can set. And so here's Earth in all of its turmoil, and I see Cosmos almost like, you know, landing by parachute in the middle of it all. And then we said, oh my gosh, we don't have to fight about this. There is something that is objectively true as established by the methods and tools of science that we can all embrace, that is in the interest of our health, our wealth, our security, the fate of our civilization. this, that's the message that's in there without being preachy.
Right.
It enables you to come to it so that you can then, so that you become a participant in that exploration of where the solutions might be. And mm-hmm. that's why I think the title of this series is stunningly simple and deep, Possible World. And the word possible is so uplifting that every time I read the title, that's good.
How far do you take that in this season? Like,
well, we go to these possible worlds, and we go to the possible worlds of the mind, and we go to the possible worlds of exoplanets, and we go to the possible...
In what sense do you go there?
We literally take you there, physically, in the ship of the imagination, which can travel in time and space.
You should get one. They're really good.
Allows you and Neil, who is taking us on this journey, to visit these moments in the future, moments in the past, and places at the far reaches of time and space. And when we get that chance to feel that we are there, it helps it, the ideas of it that are complicated, to be simplified. You know, it's easy to say what's happening with, let's say, a volcano, but if you actually are in the middle of that pyroclastic flow, you know, what happens there? So
we escaped before we got vaporized.
Yes.
So, you know.
But we
there's a scene with you see it jumping.
But we use the tools of filmmaking to, you know, hopefully, I mean, 1,000 people worked on this all around the world.
1,000? It got that high? Wow.
Yeah, well, that's 1,000 people. Right. But we only counted one from each of the 17 visual effects companies, who was like, or five from the
visual effects are just incredible. Really.
Yeah, and the animation's incredible. Yes, and she had hundreds of people working on the animation. And when you see it all come together, it's these tools we want it to be seamless to support this big idea that Neil brought up.
And can I just say something that only just occurred to me in this moment, so you're the first to hear this.
Wow.
All right. The collaboration, historically, of Carl Sagan and Andrew and others in that community, I credit them for reintroducing the concept of world as a place you might want to be. Until that came back, it was Earth, and then there are these other planets out there. The moment you say it's Earth, and then these other worlds, it's as though, oh, wait a minute, there might be life there. Maybe we'll visit it. This is another place that could be home. Okay, that's an important change in perspective. It softens your ego about what you think Earth is relative to everything else, and you're going to need that. Because the rest of the universe matters. Now, this particular one takes the concept of world to yet another level, which is there's the world of the mycelium under Earth, under the ground. There's a network of plants communicating electrochemically that's been going on under our feet, and no one told that story. Biologists knew it, but they're not even thinking of it as a world. It's just this mat of life.
And they're not interested in the narrative.
No. And what are the... I'm screaming at you. Sorry.
That's okay, keep going.
This is Neil Tyson here speaking. It's when the narrative turns something that is outside of you, previously imagined to be separate and distinct, into a world that has a literal and figurative life of its own that matters even to our survival. That's a whole other level of storytelling. So it's not just world, planet, object you might land on. It's the world of other species on Earth. There's the world of the quantum. What's going on inside atoms and molecules? That's happening right now, but you can't see it. So you need tools. You need... I come as an outsider to their world. Animation, movie making, special effects, visual effects, and I always have to sort of imagine for myself what this is, but they're going to do it. You don't have to imagine anymore. Let's do it. And so now you're going to do it. It becomes something you just read about in a book, and it transforms into a world.
I want to say one thing, though. The visual effects supervisor, he's saying this, but the truth of it is the visual effects supervisor said, okay, Neil, so you're going to communicate with a flatworm outside the window of the Ship of the Imagination. He said, Neil goes to the window of the Ship of the Imagination in the show and then puts his hands on the window and leans forward to communicate with the flatworm. And the visual effects supervisor said, we didn't have to touch the shot. I didn't have to do anything. So he knows.
I always wanted to be a pantomime.
it was brilliantly done where he's able to give us that performance to launch from and tell the story. So don't sell yourself short with the world of the movie making and animation.
No, but...
last question, sorry.
Oh, sorry. No, I'm talking too long. Sorry. Go.
But Neil, I mean, what's interesting is historically, and I'm going to compare you in a strange way, let me go see where I'm going. Like, back in the 60s and 70s, when you had someone like a Mr. Rogers, you had to have some type of figure that stepped forward that was the conduit to get from point A to point B. And he represented that for kids mm-hmm. as an educational tool. And with science, which is very intimidating for a lot of people, whatever reason, you've put on that cardigan, and you're the one that people turn to.
Took off my shoes,
as
yeah.
that easy conduit to kind of explain things. You're a safety.
I'm delighted to play that role, but I'm not the first. Mm-hmm. And I think Carl Sagan took that concept and made him someone you just wanted to listen to, because you're going to learn something, you're going to become gain some insight into something that you thought may have been intractable to you, and you'll walk away compelled to do something new with the power of knowledge you've just accumulated.
But what would you say to the people out there who are reading this, or who are intimidated by science and are just, I can't wrap my head around it.
Yeah, because they learn science in a textbook
right.
with a teacher who probably pulled them to an off-ramp from their educational curiosities.
I mean, that was the way I learned it before the internet and the encyclopedias. And
right.
And then Cosmos came along in the 70s, and it just changed everything.
So if science to you is what you learned in a textbook, then you don't know what else science can be to you. And we took on that task. Yeah, there's the narrative, but then there's me with my cardigan, but then there's the stories I'm communicating, there's the animations, there's the again, all of the hammer that is modern cinema brought to bear on this television documentary. It's the evidence that it's something else is that when you watch Cosmos, you're never thinking to yourself, I'm watching a documentary on science. There's no word for what it is.
It's a counter to the YouTube conspiracy videos, too, mm-hmm. trying to scientifically show that, you know, the Earth cannot be round.
So rather than tell people they're full of shit, okay, because what happens is, we learn from psychology and education that if someone feels strongly about something and you tell them they're wrong, they dig in stronger
yes.
into their
yes.
position. So if you do this right, what you do is that you offer a perspective that they embrace, that is accessible to them, and then when they achieve that perspective, they look back on their own thinking, and then they make the correction on their own. You can't do it yourself.
And
Cosmos is rich with tools to empower people to gain an introspection that they wouldn't have otherwise achieved.
And to hear from Kara, who provided all the animation of the show, which is this kind of soulful, meaningful connection that is a human story that is backed up with the facts that her team painstakingly... Talk a little bit about how that impacts this storytelling.
Well, just the little history in the Carl Sagan version, the first season of Cosmos, the narrative stories, historical stories were told with actors playing, you know, historical figures, which I think Seth and Ann didn't think would really play in the modern age. And so they decided they wanted to use animation. So it's twofold. We created a style and a pipeline to create for the animation for those narrative stories, which are the character stories. And then we also do these little bits of sort of like infographics where we're able, I think I felt like it's the only way to explain some things that are sort of very complicated, and I have a very small team of people, and they all had to be researchers. That was just, I had to choose smart people that wanted to do this research and turn into amateur scientists as well as animate, because it was such a huge part of the process. And they had to really understand what they were doing before they put pencil to paper. We had to watch a lot of videos, and we had a chalkboard. We really had to figure out what was going on before we were able to tackle it, because it has to be, if we're not conveying it in a clear manner that, you know, the audiences can understand, we've completely failed. There's no reason. I mean, the animation's beautiful, and it's sort of lyrical, and it's compelling, but if it's not doing its job of explaining what we're trying to explain, it's failed. So hopefully we've succeeded. The scripts were really amazing this year. They're very dense and full of information. So
I think it's the best of all three Cosmoses, yeah. Personally, by far, actually. I mean, everyone is in their A game, from top to bottom, left to right. And I know it's cliche to say that about your current project, but I really mean it. But you're the ultimate judge. You'll see it.
And two, why now? Because it's good to express what's possible, and this is about the possible worlds that we confront.
And we're so overwrought by people saying what's not possible.
Yeah, and come by hopeless. I mean, I look at a lot of young people, and they're literally justifiably feeling hopeless, and look forward to sort of like an odious future or none at all. And I think bringing them.
Use the word
some
odious.
Sort of hope. I'm sorry.
Wow, that's a good word.
I'm a little doom and gloom. But
wow.
I'm sorry, guys. We're gonna have to wrap.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, guys. Okay, thank you. Thanks for your interest.